Welcome to PodTech.net Podcast. We're here at the demo conference with Bud Colligan and Mike Boych, two famous venture capitalists now. Well, you're a famous venture capitalist with XL, and you're now with Interwest, both seasoned executives, entrepreneurs, been around a couple business cycles. We're here at Demo 2006. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Great. So you guys have seen a few business cycles, and we've been in a kind of a downward slide over the past 5 years, kind of bouncing up and kind of in an upswing. It feels good. What do you guys think?
Well, I think that we are in an uptick, but one that's more measured than the last big boom around internet technologies. The internet has continued to evolve, and I think now there's a critical mass of broadband users. So there's a whole new wave of applications that are being enabled. So we're really excited about things in rich media and multimedia. Voice over IP, I think, is an exciting area. Skype has shown the way in that area, but there's a lot more to come. Of course, security has emerged as a huge problem for users as there's more and more users and more things going on, sometimes evil things going on the internet. And then consumer applications. Finally, consumers are coming to the web in droves, particularly with high bandwidth connections. And so there's a whole new set of services, backup syncing, consumer services, photos, you know, dealing with all your digital media, dealing with all your files. I think there's many opportunities in those areas.
What do you think are the key things out there that are going to emerge out of the fog that people are going to go, hey, we weren't thinking about that? Is it going to be just blocking and tackling basic stuff or something magical?
Well, it's an interesting question. I think one of the things that we saw a bunch of plans 5 years ago that seemed misguided and failed for various reasons, and yet when you look at today's environment, the ways that it's changed, the amount of connectivity, bandwidth, the number of consumers that have broadband, the number of consumers that have cell phones, I think there's going to be a bunch of mulligans taken, basically. A bunch of ideas that didn't work 5 years ago look great today. I've seen some companies here at Demo that remind me a lot of companies that showed promise but ultimately failed 5 years ago, and I think today they're interesting plays.
Where do you have a feel for what's out there? If you had to kind of stick your nose in a couple of sectors.
Well, you know, I have a colorful past as an entrepreneur. I've been in the hardware business as well, in the semiconductor business as well as on the software side. So, at Interwest, we're looking across that spectrum. We still do a number of semiconductor deals that are the power behind your cell phone, make it work better, make the battery last longer, make the images brighter and crisper, et cetera. At the same time, we're doing things on the consumer end of the business. You know, we have investments in companies that are helping extend internet-like marketing models to places like the cable industry. We have an investment in particular in a company called NVIDI that I think is doing great work there.
Bud, you've been in obviously the media side of the business, obviously with Apple in marketing, and then now Macromedia. So the multimedia business is actually picking up, but you know, you got video blogging, you got direct access to publish, and the tools now are maturing with Macromedia and other things. Where's that all going?
Well, John, your business itself is being enabled by new platforms. Just the iPod coming out has just given you a distribution vehicle that never existed before. Certainly the bandwidth is helping a lot. So we're really excited about, we're invested in one company called Bright Cove, which is trying to, you know, take advantage of not only existing publishers, but long tail.
He's a PodTech alumni.
Yeah, Jeremy. Well, Jeremy Allaire used to be the CTO of Macromedia, where he came when Macromedia bought Allaire. But I think that's an exciting opportunity for distribution. Businesses like your own, PodTech, are new things that never existed before, where new content's being created. And it's really flipping the publishing model on its head, where there used to be these high priests that were the editors of content, and they were few in number. And now, basically, anybody can create content and publish it on the internet. And, you know, if you can drive an audience, if your content is good and people come to you, then you're going to be able to make money and monetize it. I think, you know, I'm on the board of CNET as well, and we're experimenting with a lot of these areas in video and in podcasting, et cetera. So even established companies are trying to figure out how do we adapt this new medium and integrate it into the traditional publishing model. And on the community side, really exciting. I mean, you know, obviously you've heard a lot about MySpace, but we have an investment in a company for college students called Facebook, which is one of the fastest growing sites on the internet. I think it has 6 or 7 million users already. And
that's not even endorsed by the institutions. That's just completely grassroots, organically.
Completely grassroots, started by a
no institutional influence, complete circumvention around institution. Right?
Yeah.
There's no endorsement. In fact, they don't endorse it, do they?
Yeah, Mark Zuckerberg, who's the founder and CEO, dropped out of Harvard as a sophomore after creating a little application for a Facebook-type application for Harvard. And boy, it just grew like wildfire. Completely grassroots.
And that's the audience model. I mean, it's with people so collaborative, the velocity of information is so massive now. Mike, you were one of the first evangelists. Obviously, Apple pioneered that term, evangelist. Now, companies are calling evangelists all the time. Robert Scoble at Microsoft said the technical evangelist. He's their blogger. He's doing great. He's got a huge audience. Evangelists everywhere. How do you evangelize in a market that's always on, always connected, and with developers open source all over the world, how would a company evangelize software standards or APIs, and what would your advice be to them?
Well, I mean, I think all the characteristics that you mentioned should make the job easier rather than harder. It's certainly easier to reach people, and it's as you develop software more as a service, or worst case, as something that's easy to download and get hold of and is open source that people can access, it's certainly a lot easier to build a community if you have an underlying value proposition. So I think we've seen few cases of proprietary software companies going open source for that reason. They weren't quite getting the traction, the risk of purchase or the risk of adoption to customers seemed too high, and as they go open source, they lower that risk.
Just to follow up on Mike's point, I think there's got to be a compelling value proposition, but also there just needs to be a culture of collaboration. I've been helping a small company named Rightly that has a collaborative word processor offered as a service, and it's free, and they're thinking through some other business models. But what I found interesting was that a lot of people in the Web 2.0 community just start working together, and Rightly has some hooks into its product that to allow other developers to extend their functionality, and they're very open to collaborating. They don't want to do a spreadsheet, for example, but are very open to guys that have a spreadsheet saying, how can we integrate this? How can we make the data work together? How can we make this a better experience for users? So I think the best way to evangelize is to be open, to have a compelling value proposition, and have a culture of collaboration. And if you do those things, I think a lot of people flock to your product.
But talk about, from your experience, and you were talking about earlier about media, that you was a couple key select high priests. What's the future of these guys? And you got the New York Times, you got these institutional powerhouses, mainstream media. What about the challenges? Is it so locked in?
I think that the old school media has to adapt or disappear, really. Many of them are making half-hearted attempts to change. Some are just trying to turn their culture upside down. The New York Times buying about.com, for example, they're just trying to say, hey, we need a huge web asset. News Corp buying
MySpace
and IGN, just coming in within 48 hours and buying IGN. I think it's all focused on reaching a new set of customers that digest their news in a different way.
How do these guys reboot? I mean, because they're all kind of looking in the mirror. They're all realizing it.
I'll take a stab at it. I mean, I think they're in tough straits because, as you said, the way that they distribute their product is arguably inferior, certainly less efficient than what happens on the web. The model by which they create their content is also under some pressure because in the blogging world, you don't have a stable of full-time reporters that are captive to you and that become a primary asset. So,
but you face this. You started a company called Radius, was in the screen business. The industry was evolving. Things were getting lower cost, higher performance. And you had to deal with that on the hardware side, right?
Yeah. We faced a slightly different problem, which was we had a competitor in a sense, both a partner and a competitor in Apple, who ultimately controlled the game because they shipped the computers and they essentially integrated our functionality. But in the newspaper world, it's a little bit similar. I mean, the playing field is tilted away from them. They're not in control of they had a monopoly situation with the printing presses, et cetera, you know, in a local area, and that just isn't relevant anymore. So,
just to add to that, I think, you know, if I was a CEO of the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, or Dow Jones, I think you have to make just a unequivocal commitment to the new media and manage your existing assets, you know, appropriately and fiscally conservatively, obviously, to make a profit for your shareholders. But there has to be no doubt about where the future is, both in your vision and in your strategy and in the implementation and where you're investing for the future. One of the things we talked about Apple earlier, that I think Steve has done with iTunes and the iPod and so forth, is he has stayed on the cutting edge of pricing and of performance. You've got to cannibalize your own products before someone else cannibalizes
them. Eat your own before someone else eats them.
Absolutely, and it's very difficult. I'm not saying it's easy. I mean, if you're sitting on top of a couple $1 billion of revenue that's starting to dissipate, what do you do? You know, it's a tough problem. But I think
you can bury your head in the sand or just take it and just go and run.
Well, someone else is going to if you don't do it.
So, well, let's talk about iTunes and Apple, because and that is a really interesting model. He's becoming the distribution house, the direct clearinghouse for all media, on at least music. Now with podcasting, that's basically the radio business. I mean, a lot of people are talking about podcasting as radio 2.0. This is radio, no more antennas. It's all IP-based. That's clear. I think it's the genie's out of the bottle on that. I mean, he's leading the charge.
Well, it's an interesting picture. I mean, the ugly part of the picture is Apple has a set of DRM mechanisms. Microsoft has one. They don't interoperate. Everything's fine if your entire world is Apple. If you have iTunes and iPod and you don't have, you know, whole house audio or some other thing that you're trying to integrate. But I think it's gonna be challenging for consumers, I think, as music becomes, distribution goes more and more online. One of the big problems that has to be solved is the whole DRM.
So does Apple look at me as a media developer? So in a way, if iTunes is the Mac, am I a media developer?
Yeah, I suppose you are.
I don't have tools.
Presuming you don't wrap your content in any form of DRM today. So.
No, it's all free. You know, it's a great content. You guys are providing great content, but if I don't have any tools. If Apple provided me more tools, I'd maybe use them. You know, but I don't want to get into. I hate DRM. I'm against DRM, and my stuff's free. Mm-hmm. It's a free content model.
Yeah, you have
model.
A model that's compatible with. Yeah, not using DRM.
I don't use DRM and I don't charge. But, you know, in a way, things may get charged. I had feedback from people in Asia who love the Silicon Valley access to, you know, pros like you guys who aren't going to fly and do a keynote speech or have this conversation in Hong Kong. There's a model for charge for that.
Well, yeah, I think one of the things that, you know, all media companies have to grapple with is what their business model is. Your business model is obviously advertising supported. And Google, as the, you know, 4,000-pound gorilla in this area, has made it clear that their advertising model their business model is going to be primarily ad-supported. So any kind of media company has got to look real hard at subscriptions versus charge per use versus advertising, because there are a number of companies in the space that are always going to vie towards the advertising supported model with free content. Yeah. So what's the cost that you have to pay? You know, people are putting interstitials up before, you know, you get to the content. We just saw a demo here what was it called? Smilebox, that is doing greeting cards and so forth, and you can pay $1.99 per greeting card or $4.99 a month for a subscription, or you get it free as long as you're willing to look at a 15-second ad prior to actually opening
and
the
people
content.
Are okay with that.
Yeah, people are okay with that. So, and that's a very powerful business tool. Yeah. If you're going to make something free, essentially, with maybe a little bit of a task on the part of the consumer to go through versus someone who's going to charge them a subscription or pay for it, it's going to be, you know, the large majority of people that are going to like free. So any media business has to take that into consideration.
Yeah, and what's great about iTunes is it really is a platform. It's a runtime environment, almost like a Macintosh in the old days. And I look at it that way. I mean, it's an operating environment for me. It's a clearinghouse. And they have 50 million plus users.
Right.
And so, you know, Podtech's on there, and we're featured on there, so I can't ignore that. So as more of these clearinghouses emerge, is that the direct model? Is that the new studio?
Yeah,
is that the new distribution points? Are they the new publishers?
The new hardware is the service. right? It is the Surface. It's not the Dell PC anymore. It's the Surface.
I like it, yeah. And Hollywood's going to direct. Intel's got this whole Vive thing, and they're going direct. The hardware is the Surface, so where's the developers?
It seems like this. So the iTunes is still, the iTunes site is still a point of aggregation, though. I mean, it's a little bit like the studios.
If it's an aggregator.
Access, if you weren't, if there was some reason for them not to grant you access to it, life could be bad, right? They do control a lot of traffic.
Yeah, yeah. It is an aggregator. I mean, that's what a lot of people in the industry call it, an aggregator. I call it a clearinghouse of distribution, whatever.
So the world isn't as completely democratic as maybe some people would like to see it be, but I think the realistic, you know, commercial world is never that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think 5 years out, what we will need to be careful about is how many, as the industry consolidates and there become potentially fewer aggregators. I mean, the whole notion, as Mike said, of the internet is a democratization of information. But what we also see is a lot of consolidation. I mean, Google's buying lots of companies. Yahoo buys lots of companies. Apple's a great...
It's harder to go public, so acquisition's a normal course for a company.
Exactly. And so what will happen? Will some of these people become gatekeepers such that there is less competition at some point, and they have such a large audience that they're then able to charge you for actually reaching that audience? We certainly saw that in on the platform side. You know, on the software side, we used to get, you know, $3 a unit from OEMs that were interested in distributing our software. We had an authoring tool for consumers at Macromedia. Then a couple years later, they said, well, it's only $1 a unit. Then a couple years later, they said, how much would you like to pay us to be distributed on our platform? So you will
see. It went from them paying you to you paying them.
Exactly. And that can happen as power shifts from one party to another. And, you know, I think that will be an issue to watch in the next 5 years.
Is that government policy? Is it because of Sarbanes-Oxley? Is it because of the lack of oversight, or is it just market forces? Do you see that? I mean, harder to go public now.
Oh, sure. It's a lot harder to go public.
Google's got billions of dollars in cash. Yahoo's got some cash, too. Microsoft's got some cash. I mean, they got a lot of cash. So they can mop up sectors.
Sarbanes-Oxley has made it more difficult. It takes a good year of preparation to get everything in place, the accounts, the audits, the processes, the standards that you need now to go public with Sarbanes-Oxley. I think that there are attractive alternatives for entrepreneurs in the M&A market, and also the risk and the work necessary for entrepreneurs is just so much higher. The financial markets are so much more demanding these days than they were in the past.
So Bud's five-year outlook is consolidation. Be careful. Let that democratization spread. Don't let one player dominate. Mike, what's your view 5 years out?
In terms of this whole exit...
Exit ventures, you're now a venture capitalist. We're here at Demo Exits. Just your view, market.
You know, following on the whole IPO thing, markets do mature over time. Fortunately, they grow as they're large and mature. And so we're seeing a lot of interesting companies that can create good outcomes for entrepreneurs and for investors, but they're still not dominant within their industries. And I think that makes them more acquisition candidates than IPO candidates. And, you know, investors like category killers. Google made sense as an IPO because it's obviously, as Ben said, the 4,000-pound gorilla. But I think there's just tremendous play left in the space that you're talking about. Very little of what can be done has been done yet.
Bud, Mike, thanks for the very long but great podcast. But you guys were just prolific.
We're so interesting.
Thanks so much for the podcast.
You bet.